This week on Alien Theorists Theorizing.
And dude, this to me is like one of the fucking, it gave me a shiver up my spine when I was thinking about it. They all come to the front and there's only fucking seven.
Yeah, what happened is actually another neighbor was like coming back from a party. His name was Thomas Smith, and he seen the fire and he drove back into town and personally went to get the fire chief. The mysterious disappearance of the Sodder children.
Welcome to Alien Theorist Theorizing, Case File 296. The mysterious disappearance of the Sodder children. I'm Braden.
I'm Zell. Oh, it's a light crew.
I was like, light crew. Dude, so used to pausing for a while. We got one crew member.
Dead?
Dead,
I think.
And another one maybe dead. Who knows? A
couple possible deaths.
We're recording this. Happy Thanksgiving.
Canadian.
Canadian Thanksgiving to everyone on the show. We didn't talk about this, so we can always cut this off. Did you want to introduce anything at the beginning of the show or at the end of the show? So, as announced, we've had what feels like months.
Well, it has been months.
It's actually been
a long time coming.
Yeah. We've had a logo contest going.
Well, it's been announced that it's been over. We've chosen the winner. We've said who the winner was, but we have not shown the actual logo.
Yeah. So I think moving from the release date of this one, October, so if you're listening to this live, you're going to see it ahead of time. But then the week after October, whatever is that, 15th?
16th. Coming 16th? Out October 16th.
You'll start seeing it everywhere. It'll be live on all our merch stores. You'll be able to get some swag with it on, as well as some of the runners up. Stuff will be on the merch store. So the winner, of course, was Dead Mountain Cult. Is that right?
I think it was Dark Mountain Cult.
Dark Mountain Cult. That's right. I kind of saw he couldn't be on tonight. He's going to try another time.
Yeah, we owe him an appearance on the show, so he has an open invite whenever it works for him. So he'll be on eventually.
But he did send us an unreal logo.
Love it.
See if I can
push on the live stream.
Yes. No, that's not working. Yeah. Okay. I got it. It's going to pop up right here. Give me a little drum roll, Zell. Boom. Oh my God. It's humongous. We should have planned this out better, but this is way better. Keep it going. Keep it going.
Whoa. Almost.
Holy.
Oh my God. I can't go for much longer.
Right there is our new logo on the live stream. Everywhere you get podcasts, you're going to be seeing that logo pop up. So it's going to be on merch. We're going to have sweatshirts. You know, we're milking it for all it's worth.
We're doing a full rebrand, okay? We're doing a full rebrand. Yeah. You got everyone's, you know, in entertainment, you got to rebrand as a band, every album, every couple of years as a podcast. Yeah. But I thought a little rebrand.
And so the merch looks dope. It's going to be live next Monday. But, you know, a little earlier for everyone supporting Patreon. If you jump on there, you know, probably Saturday night next week, it'll be on there for you.
See the link early.
We also had, you know, we were going to announce two runners up. Obviously, there was a third place second place and third place. Zell, you want to announce second place?
Yeah. So instead of Theorite of the Week this year at the end, we're going to do the Theorite of the Week. Theorites of the Week will be number 2 and 3 in the contest. The Slain King on Instagram, also known as Nick Heyman, coming in at number 2. A lot of great logos. And number 3, longtime fan of the show, been to pretty much every live event so far. Lizard Caveman, Ryan Villardo. number three. Awesome entries all around.
Everyone else tied for fourth.
Sucks to suck. Fourth and below.
Yeah. I mean, there was some wicked logos. It was so hard to pick. I think it came down to second and third was just so many good ones. These are fucking awesome.
A lot of volume, but all of everything submitted in number two and three was all good. In their own way.
So that's
it's over.
Logo more for
it. Took us 3 months. It took us 3 months to get it. But you know what? We're working full time.
We're happy with it.
It's fun.
Go check out the store. Get yourself some new swag. There'll be some other cool logos on there that people sent in. I'll make into some merch for everyone to check out. And for all you Patreon supporters, maybe I'll have a little discount code.
A little discount
generated for next weekend.
And we'll make sure number two and three, you're going to get your prize as well. We'll be contacting you directly.
We'll reach out in the next 6 months to line that up. But this is October. So of course everyone knows this is Spooktober. We're talking about all spooky cases. Now, is there anything more sinister now that you're a father, Zell, than crimes against children?
No, there is actually not. There is nothing more terrifying than children disappearing, abductions, something out of your control, where it's just like something happened and you hear the story, and you're like, that is fucking terrible. Like what's a guy to do in that situation? It's the worst.
Yeah, especially when, like the case we're talking about today, the vanishing of the Sauter children, literally zero closure. Forever. And not even zero closure. I would say like nuggets of like maybe they're around.
I mean, yeah, we're going to get into it, but yeah, so this event happens and for the rest of these parents' life, they are trying to find out what happened to their children.
And it's terrible.
It's terrible. So pretty much we got to go back. This is an old case. As far as true crime goes, it's an older one. And it's before any type of televised media. It says like we have radio and newspaper. That's the era.
Literally the tail end of World War II. Like World War II just ends, and it's this event. So it's like everyone's still coming home from war, and this obviously happens. It's the 24th Christmas Eve,
and so we'll start with George Sauter is the father. He was actually born Giorgio Sodu on the island of Sardinia, which is one of those Italian Mediterranean islands, kind of like, what's the other famous island? Sicily. Like kind of like a Sicily in the Mediterranean.
Yeah.
So Italian background, seems to change his name when he immigrates to America to make it a little more American, kind of blend in.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good nick, like good old George Sauter.
George Sauter. Yeah. I mean, that's a strong blue collar name right there. What are you going to do?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, sounds like a plumber.
Yeah. So he moves to West Virginia and he marries Jenny Cipriani. I mean, that's just a great Italian name right there. Also Italian, obviously, a little bit younger, 7 years younger, and by 45, they had 10 children, John, Joseph, Marion, George Jr., Maurice, Martha, Luis, Jenny, Betty, and Sylvia. So they were busy. I mean, that's just the time. Everyone's having 8, 9, 10 kids, like pretty.
Could you imagine having 10
no,
kids?
No, not now. There's no chance. Kids are now like a commodity. Before they were like, that was like a product. Like you had kids.
What do you mean they're commodity?
You have to buy them. You pretty much buy, you have to pay. They're so expensive. But before like kids, after they're like 5 or 6, they help you. And like it's on the farm, it's on the homestead. Your family was your free labor back then. So they had, people had 5 to 10 kids.
And
all
it's
the time.
It's funny because it's like, you're like, man, what kind of house would you have? See, I think nowadays we all think, because we're all so privileged, we think, oh, to have 10 kids, I'm going to have a mansion with 10 houses. No, you don't. You got an attic, baby. You just jam them all up there.
You just stuff a bunch of beds in the bedroom. You have two or three beds in the bedroom. All the bedroom is just beds, and you can just shuffle around in there and you sleep. Yeah. Everyone sleeps together.
Yeah. And if that, all the oldest ones get there and then everyone else gets little cots in the attic. They just crawl up there and that's all wasted space, baby. Right?
Yep.
And that's exactly what the Sauter family did. Like, I think seven of 10 lived in the attic and slept there.
I mean, it was like a second floor room, I guess you would call it. But pretty much he was, ended up starting a trucking company called Dempsey Transfer Company. And he like hauled coal and stuff. So he was actually fairly well off for the time. So they had like a nice house for the time, but it was not, didn't have 10 bedrooms. Yeah, they were cramming their kids up in the second floor.
He owned like two coal hauling trucks.
Yeah, he was doing, for the time, he was doing good as a blue collar worker, supporting his family, living an average American life at the time, post-war life. So yeah, on Christmas Eve, you know, it's a family time. Everyone's excited. Their oldest daughter gets home, Marion. She brings some gifts for the kids. And Jordan, Jeannie, they go to bed, you know, regular time for some exhausted parents of 10 kids. They go to bed around 9:30 or 10. But they say, like, you guys can stay up. They take their youngest, Sylvia, who's only a couple years old at the time. And Marion stays up. She's the oldest. She stays up. She watches them. And then John and George Jr., they go to bed around 11 p.m. But through the recounting of the story, they couldn't tell if their siblings were awake when they went to bed, because everyone just kind of went to bed whenever. And
no one was paying any mind. It was like everyone was kind of doing their own thing. You know, there's fucking 12 people living in that house. Like, it's hard to account for everyone. It's not like you obviously, with that many siblings, you obviously break into groups. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like,
you form your own little cliques.
Yeah, there was probably a fucking clique doing something downstairs watching TV with dad. You know, a fucking clique baking. Some other fucking, all those middle kids doing fuck all somewhere.
And I guess it falls, it usually does fall to like the oldest kid. So Marion, it was her job to get her younger sisters to bed usually. But that night she didn't. She fell asleep on the sofa, you know, listened to the radio, reading a magazine. She's passed out, doesn't really remember what happened. But about 12:30 a.m., so now it's Christmas Day, but early in the morning, the phone rings and Jeannie wakes up and answers it, but she didn't recognize the voice. It was like some like kind of like they're asking for someone else and there's like laughter in the background.
Yeah, it's like from her account, she could hear like clinging and it sounded like a party is what it sounded like. There was a party happening. And I was kind of curious, like, because like back then, I wasn't sure, and I tried to look it up, but I guess it would vary like area to area, but it's like, would it still be like operator switchboards, or were you like having numbers? Like, did everyone have personalized numbers by then? So I was like, I wonder how much of a mistake that could be.
Oh, dude, this has got to be switchboards era still.
Switchboards. So it could just be like, dude, this is Christmas Eve. So it's not uncommon, because I think a lot of weight gets put into, you know, this call being ominous, but I was like, dude, it's Christmas Eve, man. I was like, this is 1945. People are drinking at work, 100%.
Yeah, because I read that too, and I was like, well, yeah, it's 45. So, I mean, phones have been around now, but they weren't that common, I don't think, in the regular, like a regular home.
Yeah.
So if it wasn't a number and it was a switch, you had a call and the operator had to like plug you in, like, all right, you want to call that person? All right, here you go. Stand by or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she said like she didn't think anything of it. Like it was the wrong number. They hung up. No big deal. So she just kind of gets up and briefly walks around the house, kind of just do a quick check. Maybe she like wanted a glass of water or something. She's already up. So she just does a quick round of the house. She didn't see anyone else in the living room. So she assumes this everyone has gone to bed.
Yeah. And again, I'll just point out, this is at like 12:30, 12:45.
Yeah.
Right?
Early morning.
And that just for the only reason I think this call comes into question is because of the timing that it comes in.
This is true. So yeah, she walks around, she goes back to bed. Nothing seems out of the ordinary. But then, you know, about between 15 minutes and 30 minutes later, she's awakened again. But it's like a big bang on the roof, like bang, like something hits the roof.
Well, and hits it and like rolls, like you can hear it rolling. From the accounts I read, that it like, I think they had a two-tier roof, so it hits the top tier and you can hear like drop, bang, and drop off the side of like the house, right? Like people are like, what the fuck?
Well, it's probably a metal roof too, like a tin roof. So like you hear like a really loud bang, like you hear whatever it is slide down that roof onto the second floor, bang, slide down, hit the gutter or whatever. Yeah. Which, yeah, I mean, that... even then she said like it was kind of a, like the weather wasn't great, kind of windy, like could have been a branch. She didn't really think anything.
Well, it's fucking freezing cold outside. There's snow and shit. Like who knows, right? Like
she doesn't think much of it.
Yeah. She's not concerned. We're not concerned.
Yeah. It's like, that's no big deal. But then maybe about 30 minutes later, she's woken up again. And this time it's a problem, just to say the least. Smoke is filling the room. Their whole bedroom is up in smoke. It's a fire. The house is on fucking fire at this point.
Five alarm fire. Like yeah. This is fucking absolutely raging. And it, you know, as a parent, I mean, it's gotta be, you gotta be terrified getting up and seeing that. Cause you're like, I have to now find 10 kids. First thing she does is she goes to make a call for the fire department. Phone's dead. Phone's got nothing. No juice to it. Now, they did have lights because she said she turned on lights to see what was going on. Because it was fucking pitch black, right? Now, like, it's a fucking mad scramble. Like, there's four George... Four of the children come down. I can't remember which. George Sr. comes down out of the... Two of them came down out of the attic where they, like, most of the kids slept. Like, legit burnt. Right? Like well, yeah, singed.
This is kind of where the discrepancies kind of poked their way into the story because it's pretty old now. But pretty much, yeah, she wakes up, George. They get downstairs. They're screaming at their kids. Their two other eldest sons, their story is that they're screaming at their... other siblings come down and they think they hear them call back. So they run down the stairs. But at this point now, the stairs are on fire. So, yeah, but like they still have power. There's still lights. So the fire hasn't gotten like into the walls yet. It's into the house somehow. They don't really know how at this point. They call the fire department. The switchboard connects them. No answer. Just a deadline pretty much. So yeah, they're screaming. They're trying to get their children out. But the house is going up. Like at this time, we're like in sawdust insulation. We are not in a fireproofing era of wood houses.
Like a fucking match.
So yeah, the stairs on fire. So George Sr., he gets out of the house. He's trying to. It's him and his boys. They usually, I guess, the story goes that they usually have a ladder. You know, just for regular maintenance. There's a ladder outside.
Well, I think just. They get out there and everyone's out of the house. And that's when they realize they're kind of like everyone's at the front door. And dude, this to me is like one of the fucking, it gave me a shiver up my spine when I was thinking about it. They all come to the front and there's only fucking 7 of 10 outside. George, Jenny, and 4 kids, 6 of 10.
Yeah. They're missing 5 children. 5 children they're are missing in the five house. Children. Yeah.
So they're standing at the front. And one of the accounts that I read was that, because the fire was so aggressive and like insanely fast and burning hot that it's not like they had time to grab jackets and stuff. And this is December. It's freezing cold. So they actually couldn't get too far away from the house because they were like,
they need the warmth.
It's too cold. So you're basically now concerned that you have family members potentially burning alive in there, but you can't like in the same flame that you're like, I can't leave this flame because it's too fucking cold, right?
Fucking, and that's crazy. When
George and George Jr. are like, all right, well, we have the ladder around back, we can put it up to the attic window, get the rest of the kids out. So they fucking boogie around there. Ladder's gone.
The ladder that right? they claimed is always around for, you know, just for regular house maintenance is just not there. It's gone. They have no idea where it could be or why it's gone.
So George is like, okay, well, we got to like jump in. And I don't blame anyone like in the fire. This is New Year's Eve or Christmas Eve, right? Like probably everyone's at home doing their own thing. So they're like, hey, we're going to jump in because they got the 2 coal trucks. Jump in the truck. We're going to zip to town or the neighbor's house. Someone with a phone. Jump in the first truck. Truck's dead.
No, right? This is the story I heard was that Jeannie, she runs to a neighbor's house to call the fire department because she couldn't get through and then now she has to get out of the house. They do the same thing. They have no, they cannot connect to the fire department. It's the holidays. It's probably a volunteer fire department. They're not on staff. That's
exactly what it was. And not everyone had returned from the war yet. So they're also like fucking skeleton crew as is.
Yeah. And then, so because they can't find the ladders, like how, what can we, how, like, can we get something else? So they try and grab the trucks to back them up to the house. They try and grab the trucks
to climb up,
to climb up off the hood. And then like, maybe like get someone to boost up into the top, like the attic window and get in. Both trucks would not start. And for all, the story goes, these are his work trucks. There's work trucks that are always, he uses them for work all the time.
So
they, they're reliable. Like they're not broken down, but both trucks seemingly will not start. Like they almost think like something's been disconnected or like the gas tank's been drained or something.
The story goes that they were working like the day before. So like,
yeah, they work. He works 60 hours a week on these trucks. Like that's his job.
Yeah.
He's always
Christmas Eve day. He was driving these trucks around. So it's like, this is so uncommon. They just have no idea what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, that's just like, so you're just watching your house burn. You can't see your kids.
Dude, and every single like problem solved, you're like, I have an idea, is like thwarted by like absolute pandemonium. You're like, my ladder's gone. The ladder that's here, where's the ladder? It's gone. Fucking trucks won't, like, move the trucks. Trucks won't start. Call the fire department. Phones don't fucking work, right? Run to the neighbor's house. They go, like, by the time they got a hold of the fire chief, and how it worked back then is the fire chief would basically give a call to the first guy on the volunteer squad that he could get a hold of, and then be like, we have a fire, get to the station. And then he would hang up. He would go to the station. The guy who he called would call the next guy that he could get a hold of, and be like, hey, we got a fire. I'm headed to the station. Call the next guy. So they would like, until they got a team of like, you know, five or six guys or however many guys they needed to get a truck going, you know, like by the time they got the truck loaded up and headed up there, there's fucking, dude, that place is burnt to the ground.
Yeah. And what happened is actually another neighbor was like coming back from a party. His name was Thomas Smith. And he seen the fire and he drove back into town and personally went to get the fire chief.
Yeah.
But that was at 1 a.m. And due to the holidays and, you know, just the inability to connect fast, it wasn't until 8 a.m. that the fire department actually got to the house. And by that time, it's a crisp. The thing's toast.
Now, like the next day, now this is Christmas. So it's like, you know, the house is smoldering. You know, they've got the fire department, they've got police on the scene, right? They're kind of like sifting through ashes and stuff, looking. They don't find any remains. They don't find any remains. Someone in the chat just said Christmas. I was like, that's
crisp.
Christmas. Brutal. That's terrible. That's you, not us.
It wasn't us. We didn't say
Now they can't find anything, right? They can't find anything. They're looking. And like the fire department is just like, yeah, it's a, this fire, it's faulty wiring. That's what this was. That's all it was. Faulty wiring ignited and went up the house, which right away, like fucking rubbed George wrong. Cause George was like, well, if it was an electrical fire, like the fire would have fucking burnt there and we would have lost power. And we had power the whole time. And he's like, so like he right away didn't really feel like it could have been an electrical fire. And then they were saying that, like, he's like, well, why isn't there any, like, where's my kids? And they're like, well, the fire burned so hot that it just incinerated the bones and everything. They're just gone.
Yeah. I mean, there was the state fire marshal's office that advised, well, they said, don't disturb the scene, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, we're calling this a death by fire. Like,
yeah,
it was terrible.
And they were, listen, everyone there wanted to get back to their families for the holidays. And they told George, they're like, listen, that's what it is. That's what it's going to be called. But we're going to come back and do a thorough investigation after the holidays. So just leave everything, leave the scene. And we're going to.
Well, in their defense, it makes sense. Like you come to this house, it's burnt to a crisp. All that's left is the foundation. There's
it's
obviously,
like a basement, like
there's
a
obviously
hole,
no one like alive here. Like whatever happened, like it's out of their control. It's the holidays.
Yeah.
They say, yeah, just leave it alone. We'll come back. We'll sift through more. But that's not what happened, because just a few days later on December 29th, George decided through his like grief-stricken mind, he's like, I'm just going to backfill this with a bulldozer, set up a memorial, and we're going to take the remaining kids, and we're going to move out. Like, that's it. We're putting it behind.
Well, move 100 feet, because I think he built a new house 100 feet away.
Is that what it was? I couldn't actually find where he actually moved to. But.
Yeah, he just built a new house on the same property just down the way. But he backfilled. Like, the hole that was there with the basement, he just backfilled it with 5 feet of dirt.
Just filled it in.
On the 29th, filled it, and then started working with his wife to plan like a memorial garden on the site for the 5 deceased children.
Yeah. And then we said the coroner's office says it's faulty wiring, which, I mean, at the time, faulty wiring was a huge cause of.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have modern circuit boards. We didn't have the breakers. We were using like aluminum wiring that it was hotter. You had sawdust insulation. It would catch your walls on fire if it was not done right, or you left the wrong thing plugged in. You would have light sockets that turned black. You would have lights that flickered and powered like power draws and sucks that would. You could tell like this house was not well wired. But this one, supposedly, he says that he just had it inspected and it passed at the time. This house was wired fine.
Yeah, and it passed. The guy who passed it in 1945 was probably not qualified. He's just.
I mean,
everyone qualified was away at war.
Pretty much, probably how they qualified is they turn on all the lights in the house, and if nothing is dimming, they go,
"Holy shit,
looks pretty good, man."
would you look at that?
But in his defense, he said that he had it checked. He had the breakers checked. He had the wiring checked. He said it was up to the code at the time, and the problem was that the code at the time was not everything was inspected, so you could just do your own wiring if you wanted.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, you didn't have to have a, there wasn't a certified electrical installer, especially at this time. Like, probably most of the guys went to war. They're probably just coming back. They're over there building barracks and helping with that. You didn't have the highly skilled guys sticking around.
Yeah. Well, and most of them were drafted and stuff too. So it's like, yeah.
Exactly. But yeah. In the defense that they say that their lights were on while the fire was happening, it seems like if you had a short and a caught fire, eventually something's got to trip and the power's got to cease, I would think.
Yeah.
You would think.
That's what... And again,
even in bad old wiring, eventually, if you had like something that was arcing and sparking, something's got to blow and that power has to cease to like continue like that.
And my thing is, I'm like, well, how many zones were they like running? Like, you know what I mean? To the breaker boxes and stuff.
But it's in the middle of the night, so they're not really running to let power right now.
I guess so, yeah. Right? They were turning lights on to see to get out.
Because they didn't have, at this time, it's either wood fire for heat or like an oil or like some type of like that. They're not running like baseboard heaters and like high amp heaters at the time, I would think.
So just lights. So it's
seems
it's
just lights.
Yeah. It's not a lot.
But I mean, bad wiring is bad. It could just arc. Yeah, it can do that. But it seems they were convinced that it was not bad wiring because they had it checked. And the fact that the light stayed on as the fire progressed to a point, obviously, and then eventually the house burnt down. But.
Well, and then like, so, you know, just before like he backfilled it, like they were kind of searching the scene and the rubble around, you know, getting this memorial garden ready. And they like, you know, they're in shock that, you know, the fact that there was this fire, they lost 5 kids and the fire was so hot that it eviscerated everything. And as they're going around, they're...
That's something we got to talk about, you know, too, actually.
Because there's...
The heat of the fire.
Well, yeah. Because, well, I mean, the first time I heard that, I went, it eviscerated them. My eyebrows raised. I was like, I'm pretty sure that would have to be so fucking hot to burn bones. Like, unbelievably hot.
Yeah, I mean, I looked into it while reading the case. I kind of looked into, like, what it is, and you're like, even crematoriums say, like, no, the bones, they crumble and crack, but they are there still. Like, you have to really fucking...
Like, in hours at 2,000, 3,000 degrees.
Well, 1,800 degrees, so, like, standard building fire. But then you read this guy like, well, maybe he hauled coal. Did he have coal in the house? Did it make it burn hotter? Like, but I'm like, I don't know.
Well, one of the problems is with that, they even started to suspect this was an issue, is that they found like, you know, partially melted ladder, not the ladder that was supposed to be outside, like a partially melted ladder, you know, some like coins and stuff that were just charred that were like right in there. They're like, well, how hot do these things, shouldn't these things be melted if it was that hot to melt bone, like eviscerate bone? So like Jenny, this is kind of interesting. She like turned into like fucking the original Mythbuster.
Yeah.
And she started like collecting bones and shit like of different animals and stuff. And she'd fucking burn bonfires and throw fucking bones in there.
Just to see.
And for hours and hours just to see and put different things in it to see if she could destroy the bones. And she's like, the bones aren't going anywhere. Like, where the fuck are the bones? This doesn't make any sense. So she started to like reach out to like scientists and like professors who all agreed with her. They're like, there is no way your house fire burned hot enough to fucking eviscerate not one, but five bodies. Because she even read about a similar story, a similar fire where there was like six children lost in a fire. They found all the bones, including the bones of a 3-month-year-old baby. So she was like, this isn't adding up for me that my house somehow burned so fucking hot that it eviscerated like a five.
Disintegrated the bones to powder. They're like,
yeah, I don't know. Of five bodies, like maybe one you could go, okay, sure, hot spot or something, okay, sure, but all five, like they're spread out, like no, it just doesn't add up for her.
Well, I mean, that's why some people said, if you go down the Reddit hole about this case, is say they were in the attic and the house burnt and he did have coal in the basement and that coal fire burned hot enough, maybe.
Yeah,
I don't think it was ever said that he actually stored coal in the basement. that was just a theory that's like, he hauled coal, so therefore he must have coal in the basement.
Yeah.
It's like, why don't you just keep it in the truck? Or like, does he keep coal in his house? I don't think.
I have no idea because I've never burned coal. But like, how long does coal burn for? Because they were in the rubble the next day, right? You know what I mean?
It would still be hot.
I feel like
100%.
You know what I mean? Like you wouldn't be getting in there enough to do like they swept the debris good enough to say we're not going to find any bones. They're eviscerated. So they swept through the ashes enough. And it was like, if this is some sort of fucking coal fire, there'd still be like red hot coals, you'd think.
I mean, if it's the day after, it's still hot. There's no way you have gloves and you have a shovel and like it's hot.
I guess they had a fire truck at the
scene. Yeah, you would have soaked it.
Probably watered it.
But it'll still be, yeah, as you're digging, it's going to be hot. Like,
I feel like if there was coal in the basement, that would have been a fucking big thing. Have been like, yeah, fucking, they had to spend 8 hours cooling off the coal that was in the basement. But like, how are you going to haul that coal out? You just got a fucking mound of coal in the basement?
Yeah, you just bury it. Fucking get rid of it.
Yeah, but why would you be storing it? If you're a coal hauler, you're just like, just shovel the coal into the basement?
That's what it did for me. It was like, that seems like inefficient to like put it in the basement, like put it in the shed or just leave it in the truck. Like how much coal are you bringing home? Unless you're heating your house with coal, like you have a coal furnace in the basement, maybe. Perhaps. Maybe he did have a coal furnace. I'm sure that was a thing for a while.
Yeah, but I don't think you'd have a fucking pile,
like a mound.
A mound that big. But I mean,
I don't know. I would imagine you would keep most of the coal outside and you bring in kind of like firewood. You bring you have a fire shed, like a wood shed. You bring in what you need for a couple of days. Then you restock.
Yeah. So they, you know, they're the family's starting to suspect that something else is afoot. One of the other reasons for is the ladder that should have been around the side of the house that they always kept there was found thrown down an embankment 100 feet away.
It was?
Yeah.
They did end up finding it in the end.
Yes. Down an embankment, which is this, like that, seeing that basically set George's mind to the fact that like something else is going on here.
Well, it's that fact. It's that. It's also, I mean, they had that weird phone call.
Yeah.
I mean, which they thought nothing of at the time, but you're like, now you're like, okay, you start as a parent, you've lost five kids. And you're like, okay, that ladder wasn't there. My trucks wouldn't start. Were they tampered with? So where mine went, but then I couldn't find anything solid where it's like, oh yeah, they disconnected the battery or something was. So in my mind, they're like, these are carbureted engines, right? There's no fuel injections. He flooded the engine. Yeah. In his haste to start it, maybe he flooded both of them. I mean, that's perfectly possible. He just couldn't start them for whatever reason. It's cold out, right? I'm not sure what the temperature, I'm West Virginia. I mean, it's not It's not Canadian prairies, but I'm sure it can get pretty cold.
I'm sure it can get pretty cold.
Now,
so they're starting to like contact the police because they want like more investigation done. The police are, you know, kind of hesitant. So they start like hiring private investigators to like look into things. One of the first fucking smoking guns that I found that the private investigator finds on the scene is they go up and they look and they see a line cut at the pole to the solder house and 14 feet up a pole and the telephone wire has been cut. So someone would have had to scale the telephone pole to snip the telephone line to their house.
So I read that too. And then it made me think like, well, how could they even call the switchboard?
See, in the story that I read is they picked up the phone dead.
Mm, yeah. So I didn't read that. But I did hear that this was, that there was a cut line.
And now the solders maybe thought that I guess a couple days earlier, a gentleman had come by the house, wandered, and had like knocked on the door and was talking to George and was like, hey, like, you have any work? And he's like, no, man, sorry. Like, I've got nothing for you. I got no work. And the guy was kind of like, all right. And kind of like sauntered around the side of the house, kind of like looking at the house. And then like George kind of followed him. The guy like just turned and like got super fucking mad at him and was like, fuck you, you like fucking asshole. And he's like, you're going to fucking pay for the shit you've been saying about Mussolini, which I was like, whoa, what? Because at this point, Mussolini's been dead for a couple of years now, but I guess his old Georgie boy was of avid. It was well known in the community that he had a distaste for Mussolini. And this guy leaves and they attributed, because he's like, this place is going to fucking burn to the ground, fucking wired all bad, fuck you. And then he leaves. And so George kind of figured that it was him trying to climb up to cut the power on him. And he was an idiot and cut the wrong line. But to me, I'm like, well, that's pretty fucking suspicious that you have someone, you know, going up on that night, the same night you have this fucking fire and, you know, it's your phone lines cut. The one thing you needed to call for help.
Yeah. I mean, that is suspicious. I mean, I heard that story as in he was actually I thought he was a salesman trying to sell them life insurance.
See? Well, I heard another story about the fucking life insurance salesman. Why don't you tell that one?
Well, so he was like an ex-employee of Sauter, and he went trying to sold them life insurance. You should get life insurance for your kids, blah, blah, blah. And when he said no, he pretty much said like, well, your house is going to burn down, blah, 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 and your kids are going to die and all this shit. And he's like,
yeah.
Excuse me?
How dare you talk about whatever the base to all these stories is, how dare you talk bad about Mussolini? And then he leaves. Yeah, I heard both those kind of ones, so I wasn't sure. But like both of those, whichever, if one or both or none are to be believed, like this happened days before. Right before these events. Now, the other thing is one of the remaining girls is kind of, you know, sifting through the snow and stuff. When the snow starts to melt, you know, a couple of months, I actually don't know the date later. And she kind of finds some weird fucking green ball with a green cap with like a military symbol on it. Brings it to her dad. Her dad brings it to the police and it turns out it's like a fucking grenade. Right. So now they're thinking, hey, remember that fucking banging that we heard and then rolling off the roof? We think someone threw this fucking grenade at our house.
Right? Yeah. So that story was in the spring, the following spring. Yeah. They found like it's called a small, hard, dark green rubber ball like object. So I guess it looks like those little pineapple grenades of World War II.
Pineapple bombs.
Pineapple bomb, pretty much.
Yeah.
But it's in the bush, so you throw it on the roof, it explodes, and then it rolls off into the bush?
Or it didn't detonate.
Well, then what would have started the fire?
That's a good question. Well, we also have reports of fucking men in black hurling fireballs at the house. Right. And this is from an unnamed bus driver who came forward and said that on his route, he had seen. It's hard to say if they were dressed in black.
I don't think they were men in black, but they were.
In black.
Yeah. It's a mysterious detail of the case. On that same night, when a local bus driver, it just says, I don't think he ever gave his name. He witnessed people throwing what appeared to be balls of fire at the solder home as he drove his bus past the house. Just chucking up balls of fire.
Yeah. So you have all these fucking like weird things starting to line up and come together. But after the break, we'll kind of get into, you know, some of the more troubling pieces of evidence that they find maybe allude to, you know, maybe some people are not vanishing.
They lose their five kids for 2 years. They can't come to grips with it. And the story delves farther down the rabbit hole. We're going to be right back after a quick beer. We'll keep it going.
All right. So one of the things that fucking, you know, obviously you're like, hey, well, what's going on here? There's no bones. Parents are kind of getting sketchy. What's happening?
The fire happens. They have all winter to stew about it. They go back in the spring. They supposedly find this incendiary device looking green ball. But then pretty much
that's kind of like the trucks don't start.
It's kind of like the end of it at that point. And then 2 years later in 47, the parents always wonder, like, we never found the remains. We never really got the closure. Like, here's your children. Yes, they burned
in a
fire.
When mom's doing Mythbuster experience, being like, the bones don't burn.
Yep.
The bones don't burn, right? Like going crazy.
So at this point, they're convinced that their children did not burn and that they were involved in some type of abduction, like child trafficking abduction. Like this fire was purposefully done and then someone had abducted the children somehow. I mean, it is a mystery because like it doesn't really, none of it really adds up because it'd be a hard abduction, but they never found the remains. And then in 47, it's called Look Magazine. I guess, I don't know why they're scrolling. There's this searching through this magazine and they've seen what it looks, seems to be like an image of their daughter, Betty, who passed away in the fire. Looks exactly the same. They're convinced this is their daughter.
100% convinced.
Right?
Like, I'm pretty sure they got it's hard to decipher this case because it's older. It's definitely a hot topic on Reddit and different internet boards of what exactly transpired. So a lot of it's kind of hard to sift through because you're like, to find out what's fact and what's internet, you know, kind of theory that's been adopted as fact. It's kind of hard to decipher. Now, one of the things that I had read is that they had sent like private investigators to like the town where these photos were taken to track down this girl. And like, she just was like, when they found her and the parents, they were just like, no, she's not talking to you. We're not talking to you. She's not talking to you. She didn't want to talk. And they left. And they're like, that's it. They had not like cold lead. Like they just would not talk to the private investigators who tracked them down.
So the investigator found this alleged family who had this kid that looks just like her daughter and they just wouldn't talk to him.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, in that family's defense, you'd be like, what the fuck? This is our daughter. We're not talking to some crazy private investigator stranger.
Yeah, but get the fuck out of here.
What are you talking about?
And I mean, they were hiring private investigators. Like sometimes they would like chase, like think they had a lead. They had a woman that had gone to the police and apparently stated that she saw five of the kids get in a car and drive past her the night of the fire.
Yep, I did hear that one.
Which also fueled like, you know, the parents to be like, well, someone took the kids. And they would like hire private investigators to be like, to track these leads. Sometimes in other towns, they'd be like, hey, we have someone that said they saw them in like Chicago, right? And they'd pay out of pocket up front for a private investigator. And the private investigator would come like, yeah, I got the case. I'm on it. And they'd never hear from
just
the private
investigator
again. Just
take their money. Yeah, just fucking just take their money. Take the couple leave. Grand or whatever it was and just not do right? anything.
I think by the end of like 1955, they had spent upwards of like $15,000 on like hiring PIs, like, different PIs and like chasing down leads like of this case. Like it's crazy. At one point they were so convinced that their kids had been kidnapped, and you know, and they're getting, you know, fueled with some conspiracy that would get you banned on some social media platforms out there, that they're like, their children were abducted and sold on the black market. And they're so convinced. They're so convinced, and like they're trying to pitch their case to the police, to the fire department, like anyone who listens. And like they want nothing to do with it. Case closed, basically. They actually write to the FBI. This part was like unbelievable to me. They write to the FBI and give them all the details of the case, including like, you know, letters from people who have said they've seen the kids, all the accounts, the bone situation, letters from professors agreeing that fire wouldn't have been burned, you know, at a long enough time to eviscerate all remnants of the bones, all this stuff. And the FBI, they actually get a letter back from J. Edgar Hoover, who goes like, hey, listen, this is not really in our jurisdiction, but what you're sending me has piqued my interest. And the FBI will assist with this investigation if the local authorities request our help. So they brought that to the police department, the fire department. And for whatever reason, that request was never sent to the FBI. Right?
Yeah. So, I mean, that could be the case, and that could be internet lore, because it's hard to decipher which was...
It does kind of like stretch into the grandiose of like a letter from J. Edgar, the legendary.
I mean, let's be real. Edgar Hoover. If it was from the FBI, sure, maybe it's signed by the FBI director, but it wasn't from him. Like he probably just stamps letters left and right. Like he's not fucking writing nothing.
Yeah. The other one that's interesting is like, so you got to remember, this family now has like a healthy distaste for the local authorities, whether believing like this is incompetence or like something more nefarious that they're covering up. So they're constantly hounding, you know, the local authorities. And finally the police chief at the time of the fire comes out and says like, listen, you know, this is enough is enough, you guys. Enough is enough.
The fire chief,
he's like, you know, they're dead. They're gone. And I didn't want to tell you this because I didn't want to break your heart. But the day of the fire, I actually found a human heart.
Doesn't make any sense.
And I put it in a box.
And I buried it here.
I buried it in the remains. Because I didn't want you guys to suffer to see it. And, you know, like it was a human heart. So like at this, obviously, if you're thinking like, you know, the story is bones eviscerated. And you're probably wondering yourself, well, how the fuck do all the bones get eviscerated?
How does a body become incinerated and the heart just mysteriously just falls out and just is sitting there?
So he came, and the fire chief goes like, hey, I will show you where I buried it. Right. And then the other thing to you is probably like, you're probably thinking in your head, you're like, well, didn't George bury everything under 5 feet of dirt? Yes, he did. So they go out together to the memorial, what is now the memorial garden, with some shovels. And the fire chief proceeds to dig in the exact spot where he says he buried the heart. And they dig it up. And lo and behold, there is a box.
There's something in the box.
With some sort of mass of flesh in a box.
Well, at this point, we're a couple years after now. So this is a fucking probably just a horrid piece of organic material.
And the fire chief is like, okay, see there, put it back. It's good. See, told you. Tell them the truth, put it back. And the family's like, well, no, we're
not so fast.
We're going to send it away to get tested. And he's like, sorry, what? What'd you say? Test it? No. Just put it back. This is how you get ghosts. Put it back. And they do not listen to the fire chief. They send this heart away for analysis. And lo and behold, the tests come back that this is, in fact, a cow's liver.
Well, And what I read is they sent it to a funeral director, someone who, and he oversees like the cadavers and stuff. I'm not sure why you go to a funeral director. You think you would go to some type of anatomy, some type of doctor, like master of anatomy or something. But anyway, yeah. Whatever it is.
Well, I'm sure a funeral director's seen enough.
That's what I mean. So he says like, no, this is a beef liver, which I mean, a human liver and a beef.
hold on. I have questions because who refers to it as a beef? Look at all those beef in that field. That's a beef liver.
He refers to it as a beef liver. And in my mind, I went,
why not a cow liver?
I don't know.
Why wouldn't he refer to it as the fucking animal?
Maybe he did originally and it's been lost in translation through the internet lore. But just, when I hear fucking like beef liver, I think of a liver that's probably multiple times the size of a human liver, just the size of the animal. That's what I think.
Yeah.
And I go like, it's a big difference between a heart and a liver, and then also a heart and a beef liver, which is probably the size of a fucking giant plate or something like this.
Yeah. Maybe he carved it up a little bit though. You know what I mean? Like maybe he tried to make it look nice.
he fucking cookie stamps it.
Yeah, it was in a perfect shape of a heart. Of a beef liver
heart. The symbol of a heart. doesn't really look anything like a real heart, but it was shaped like the symbol, like a gingerbread man of a heart.
Yeah, I just love that.
I read the part of the story. He's like, liver. That seems. And then his defense, he's like, well, I didn't want, like, they were already burnt. There was no point in me telling you that I found this body part. I just left it in the property. And you're like, I guess. Like, you think you would say something.
But, the problem is, you have this family that is already like something nefarious happened here and the local authorities are working against us and you have the fire chief come out and pull a stunt like this. You're like, if they weren't convinced, if they weren't 100% convinced that something had gone on, they are now, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like
now
why?
It's suspicious. There's
like, cause it looks like to me, like it's just a regular person. It like, I'm like, you know, I guess never attribute to malice what you can attribute to incompetence, but it does look like you're trying to throw people like just like an off from pulling strings. Right. Cause you got to remember at this point too, like one of the things the family's done is they've erected a giant billboard with like all the family, like all the missing kids' photos and stuff and being like on Christmas Eve, our house burnt and our 5 children were kidnapped. Right.
Yeah.
And it says they have like a reward out at this time too of like, hey, like, you know, any information.
Yeah. They put in a reward out and then like the next year they doubled it. I think they doubled it again. Like they were willing to pay at the time, thousands and thousands of dollars, which equivalent to today would probably be like paying like what? 20, 30 grand, 40 grand maybe.
Yeah, probably.
Cash.
Yeah. Now, see, this is another part that is kind of like different. I heard kind of like 3 different accounts of this. Now, one of the accounts is I heard that like after this kind of the fucking liver, the beef liver gate.
Liver gate.
They're like, local authorities are kind of like, start to kind of point the finger back at George. And they're like, well, listen, man, we told you not to fucking bury the site. We weren't done. And you buried it, right? What do you want us to do? You fucking, you've destroyed the scene.
He did backfill it.
And now you're fucking bitching and moaning at us, you know, when you were the one that fucking did this. So like in one of the, I'm kind of going with the middle account that I read, like George at this point, he goes like, all right, well, I'll fucking let's dig it up then, baby. Let's dig it up.
Let's go.
So this is like 5 years after. He like brings some like fucking pathologists and like some other people to like observe it and like kind of like excavate it slowly and like have sifters and they go through like every bit of like dirt in the remains, dig it right up. And one of the things they find is a fucking human spine. And the interesting thing about this human spine,
part of a human
the remains
spine.
Of a human spine, it was like what?
It's like a few vertebrae of a human spine.
Yeah, but the based on, like, I didn't realize this at different times in your life, like different parts of your spine fuse. So like, basically they can tell, like, with the amount of spine they had, that the person was like 16 or 17, which is too old to be any of the missing solder children at the time of the fire. And they're like, cause the oldest missing kid is 14. And they're like, that doesn't, it wouldn't make sense. It wouldn't make sense for the spine to be this fused at 40. It just doesn't happen. The other issue is the spine's not burnt, not affected by fire in the slightest. This spine has not touched flame. Now, they attributed this to like, you know, well, you backfilled it. It was probably just in the dirt you backfilled it with. And I was like, in my head, I was like, where'd you get that fucking dirt? Right? I was like, where the fuck was a fucking, like, a, just a fucking half a spine of a 16-year-old boy?
Yeah. So this happened in 45. In 49, they do the excavation. They find the spine. The spine is not burnt. It is a 16 or 17-year-old vertebrae. Not burnt, but in the backfill of the burnt house where five people died. And you're like, what? And then they concluded that that just must have been, just must have been there in the dirt.
Yeah, oh, it's fucking one of those fucking rogue, everyone's got a backyard spine. You do enough digging. I was like...
Well, and that, and it was the oldest guy, I think, was 14. Maurice. Yeah. Maurice was 14. He was the oldest of the kids who died. So it it's not his spine, regardless, even if that, for some miraculous reason, that part of his body didn't burn in the initial fire and it was a leftover. It didn't match his age. That's what they're saying. They're like, this can't be Maurice because he was only 14. And you're saying with quite certainty that this was a 16 or 17 year old spine, which that's to me, I'm like, this is, well, where'd the spine come from? Whose spine was this?
Yeah. There is a couple of weirder things that go on a little later on, but like at this point, we're like, let's kind of like pause around like the 1950 here before we kind of, because I know there's some other weird shit with like some pictures and the family thinking kids are still alive. But like at this point in time, when I'm looking at what's happening with them, like at this kind of the finding of a spine, you know, kind of made me think that, like, because like everyone says, like, George was like a loving and caring father. That's like pretty, like, everyone.
All the accounts say he was just a, yeah, this good father.
But like, part of me, I was kind of like, did the kids escape? Like, did these younger kids like kind of band together? Like, we got to get out of here. Right. Like, maybe things weren't all wasn't well. You know what I mean? Cause I was like, maybe this guy had a darker side. Right. Like, cause I'm like, is it like, dude, to find a fucking human spine, you know what I mean, is one thing. Then you start to look at it, like, I was like, why the fuck? Like, you're going to backfill it that quickly after? Like, you're just like, I'm doing it. I'm not going to wait.
They said when they found the human spine, they're like, it must have been from the fill material used to backfill the site. I'm like, okay, so there was a spine around the area in the dirt that they just pushed into the hole. That's what it was. Cause that's what, in the end, that's what they said.
So yeah.
But
that didn't raise any alarms of like, why was there a spine of a 16-year-old?
Yeah. So that theory of, let's just hypothetical.
Yeah. It's hypothetical. We don't know. We have no idea.
Sauter Sr. He's an old school guy. He gives the belt. It's, you know, he's scolding his children. The children don't like it for whatever reason. They light the house on fire in the attic. They jump out jump onto the roof. That was the bang. Boom. Let's see. They escape.
Yeah.
They run away. The house burns down. They're dead. But they're not because they're still alive. So where, but I mean, that's, it's such a low probability for five kids. Some of them, like some, I think the youngest one was like 4 or 5 years old.
Five years old.
I mean, that's like, you're not at the age where you would even understand that your dad was a very abusive person. You're not at the age to cognitively,
to cast fireball
at the house and then to escape the house and then live somewhere on your own with a new identity, I guess. Like get far enough away where you're not part of that family. Maybe the kid, was 14, like 14, like when you're 12, 14, you're pretty smart, right? You are pretty smart.
Yeah.
You're just not fully developed, but you're fairly smart. You would understand if your dad was a dick and he was beating your mother or was beating, you would understand
that. Or
there's
a reason why there's 16-year-old spines around the property.
Yeah, exactly. So was he involved in some other shady stuff? Had other bodies buried on...
Right. Because like
other bodies buried and then he backfills them all because they're like, well, they're not going to look there now because this is a crime scene. They're not going to dig it up. So the other bodies that were there are now part of the crime scene. But then why dig it up again in the future? Like if you really, he was like a bad dude and he had a couple of skeletons in his yard, let's say.
Like you wouldn't have taken Phil from that area.
Or no, you would have known. Maybe you would have taken Phil, put it into the pile of, into the foundation of your house that burnt with your children. So no one's going to go disturb that land ever again. That's now. So those other crimes are hidden, but now to go dig those other crimes back up and be like, oh, here's a skeleton. And they're like, wait a minute, Sodder.
Yeah.
Whose skeleton's this then? That's why some of the points of the case are like, this is fucking crazy. How does this even happen?
Yeah. Now there is one last fucking grand mystery of this.
Quite a bit later.
I mean, the family never once relented.
Nope.
In their search for their children, ever.
To their deathbed.
Right up until their deathbed. And like, even some of the, like, I think the last remaining Sodders, I don't know if she's still living. She was like 70 a couple years ago. And like, even she was still like,
something happened to my siblings. Yeah.
Yeah. So in 1967, Jenny received a letter from Kentucky, and inside there was just a photo, and the letter was open and resealed. And it was a picture of a young man with a cryptic message that said, "Lewis Sodder, I love brother Frankie, little boys A90132 or 35. And when she looked at it, Jenny looked and she was like, this looks like my son, Lewis. So much so that she frames this photo, puts it up in her house. They blow up this photo and they add it to their missing kid billboard that they're so sure that this person is like their aged son, Lewis. Right? They have no idea what the other cryptic messages is. They have no idea. But like, George traveled to Kentucky looking for this person, like couldn't find nothing. They had no idea, but like who sent that? Why send it? Right?
Well, this bill
fucking weird.
For that one, the billboard's been up for that long. There's some people who just want to fuck with you. You know, there's some people who would find a photo that maybe, okay, this is what, 22 years later. Oh, here's a photo of a guy that maybe could be there at the time, would have been 10-year-old son. Someone could be fucking with him in that scenario. Be like, it's possible for someone to be fucking with like that. But if you were, because the main theory, like the leading theory, is they were victims of human trafficking of some kind. Like they were abducted, taken, shipped out for whatever reason. It would just be a very rare case where multiple members of the same family out of their house are trafficked. Usually it's people traveling, usually younger people, usually girls, traveling by themselves or with one other person, they're taken and never heard from again. It's very rarely that five siblings from the same family go missing due to human trafficking. I think you'd be hard pressed to find another case with five children in the same house.
Yeah, I mean,
in America, let's say we're saying in America, we're saying post-war America, trafficking has been going on like forever, still to this day. But from your house, five kids. I mean, nothing's impossible. It just seems like a stretch, in a way.
Yeah, it's it just does, it doesn't, it's interesting because I'm like, when you say like, maybe it's someone fucking with them, I'm like, possibly. And that's why it kind of leads me to down this one rabbit hole. Cause I was kind of thinking the Troll Avenue, but this is 1967. So basically you would have to be traveling the area, see the fucking billboard, right? You would have to then like go to like a fucking newspaper place. Like you would have to actively go to try to track down research on this topic. Do you know what I mean? To find out more about what happened. It's not like there's internet. So you might have to go scroll through old newspapers of the city. Like you would have to do some work to just like look at the billboard. And then like you live in Kentucky and then be like, I'm going to fucking write these people. This is going to be a fucking a good gag. I find that a little bit far-fetched that someone would go through that much work. That's why I kind of like, you know, one of the fucking, you know, two of those stories that we talked about of like either the person looking for work or the person selling life insurance. The one thing that kind of ties those two stories together, whichever one you're going to believe or not, was the fucking talk of how outspoken George was against Mussolini.
This is true.
And one of the theories is that like, because he was so outspoken in the time that like, he actually was like lost favor with a lot of the fucking
Italian community
mafia. The Italian mafia and the mob. And like, because he was so outspoken, you know, this is funny. Cause this is an internet one is that it was so outspoken. This is basically like a fucking hit. Right? Like they fucking go and actively
burn his house down,
take the kids, burn his house down, kill the kids. And then they like, I could see them tormenting him for years, right? Because he, you know, he might know and not want to believe that this happened. And then the mob's just like, yeah, hey, here's Louis Sauter. Like maybe Frankie's something to do with some, like, you know what I mean? Something that George would know to rub it in. And it's sent to his wife, you know what I mean? To stir things up. But, you know, like, I don't even think it has to do with that much about, like, talking bad about Mussolini. It's like, dude, if you think about some of the mob-run things, like, the fucking... Dude, the mob had a trash empire on the whole East Coast, right? They owned all the fucking trash, you know what I mean? And recyclings. So it's like, maybe it had just as little to do with, like, George had a successful business and he didn't pay in the mob.
Yeah, didn't pay
in. Or the mob wanted to edge him out of his competing business, right?
I mean, I think that makes more sense than like trafficking, that someone burned his house down.
Yeah.
Someone burned it down. And like when they say like, oh, we sifted through, we didn't find bones, like, we did say that like it's during the holidays. The initial search was probably pretty quick for anyone who probably arrived on scene and seen the house was crumbled to the ground. There was nothing left. Like if there was someone living in this house or didn't escape, they are dead.
Yeah.
How thorough was the actual search? They go back 4 years later and they search again. Decomposition happens a lot in 4 years. Maybe the bones aren't disappearing, but maybe not. The bones are just, they don't really look like bones. You'd have to really know what you're looking for to find. Because bones, when you heat them, what I found is if you get them really hot in like a crematorium, they don't necessarily turn to dust.
But from your experience.
From my experience of how many bodies I have physically burnt to a crisp. Bones, they crack and crumble into like pile. They don't like... You're not going to see a full, like, you know, tibia or fibia or femur. Like, you're not going to see, there's going to heat, it's going to dry out completely. There's going to be nothing left in it. The marrow is going to bubble and it's going to crack and splinter. But it's not going to, like, just turn to dust and just evaporate. But if you were to mix that with 4-year-old dirt and whatever else is there and all the rain, 4 years later, I think it's hard to find something. I really do.
Yeah.
So no, if they didn't find it too. The first, because no one was really looking that hard, because like these people burn to death, and I don't want to be here. It's Christmas Day. I just think that initial search was probably bad. If you're going to go like Occam's razor, like easiest theory. Unfortunate that they burnt. But the Mussolini stuff right at the end of World War II just fits so tightly. And the mafia stuff. It'd be an interesting, it's probably a whole podcast on its own, the interesting ties between like the mafia and the actual like fascist regime in Italy at the time, right? It has to be like a pretty strong connection.
Yeah, those ties run deep, man.
Because it was because like that like pre-World War II Italy is like, you know, that's post prohibition in the States. That's big mafia run era. There's something to that for sure. I mean, was this guy part of it? Who knows? That's maybe a stretch, but that is an interesting angle to be like, yeah, we have this we have a dictator in Italy, in America, when the biggest crime syndicate to ever operate is hailing from Italy, still like a lot of family and family ties to Italy. That is an interesting angle, 100%.
Yeah, I think that's the, because when you start to look at like, because there is things where you're like, what the fuck? Like some anonymous lady, you know, says the phone line being cut, grenade being found. Like, I'm like, it starts to like, and then you look at that, you look at all these weird like coincidences. Like, so imagine now the mob comes in, let me paint a picture. They come, they fucking grab the ladder, throw it over the embankment. They fucking take the batteries, right? Or fuck up the gas tank or whatever. Bleed them dry. They go and cut the phone line. You know what I mean? Then they fucking torch the house. Right? Maybe someone throws a Molotov cocktail. Right?
Right.
And it's like, if you, right? Because we have the fucking, someone, we do have an account of someone saying, I saw the fucking, a Molotov, like a fireball, right? So maybe that's a Molotov cocktail, right? Being thrown. Now, it's that picture to me, you can paint, and then I'm like, and then the mob continuing to harass his family by being like, sending them letters, sending them photos, like years and years later. Like that's like some shit of like, to the wife, you know what I mean? Like, cause maybe old George like knew something, like maybe he knew more than he let on, but he just couldn't ever let his wife know. Like he had to let his wife believe.
Yeah. He had to take it to the grave to.
Yeah. That's kind of what I did. And if that's the case, that's what happened, because he continued to search and continued to help his wife search. Like to what he died 1989, like, you know, fairly not that long ago. We were just born.
I mean, he lived like a regular length life, living to his,
yeah,
because he's what, born in the 1920 or something? Oh no, he's born in 1895. Yeah. So he lived to his 96 years old. I mean, that's fucking long life.
It's the discrepancies for me, the discrepancies of like any theory for me is that I cannot get those kids out of that house, because you got to remember there was two other siblings up there with them, two of the older siblings up there with them that escaped.
Yep.
I cannot get those kids out of that room without those two others knowing. You know what I mean? Like if we're to believe someone like from the mob came up, fucking escorted them out the window, because there's no remains. So that says to me that, you know, those five kids were not there.
Gone. Have to be. Where, or a bad search.
When? Maybe. But they redug it up. And then to not find anything, I'm like, maybe fucking, maybe George went through. Maybe he went through the fucking fire and got rid of bones and then backfilled it. We don't know what he did, because he tampered with the site. You know what I mean? So it was
relatively so fast fucking, after though, but yes, he did. They said, leave it. I mean, obviously we've searched the area that we can search is gone, because it's burnt. There's not here. So let's leave it to the new year. Let's let it simmer. He's like, I can't handle the grief. I'm going to bat. Personally, for me, I don't want to ever go to that site ever again. I don't want to step foot on the property. I definitely don't want to backfill it, you know?
Yeah.
Like I if something tragic happened to my family, I'm not going back. Like I would not, that's it. I'm not going back. I'm not going back. Personally, I just don't see how you could be like, you know what would make me feel better? If I rented, or I'm not sure if he rented it or he knew someone who had it or he had it himself, but I'm going to take this fucking loader, this bulldozer. I'm just going to fill in where half my family died. That'll make me feel better, I think.
Yeah. It's.
I would, if you really wanted to do it, I think you would get, would you not like hire someone to do it? Like, would you really want to? Because just hypothetically, say your family did burn in this tragic event and you didn't find their bones right away, but if they're in there and you're fucking bulldozing and backfilling, you're pushing around their body.
Yeah.
You would be like, if maybe you didn't find them right away, but if they're in there, I just feel like that's like not the way a loving father would try and handle his grief right away too. Like only 4 days later, he didn't like come back 3 months. He didn't come back in the spring.
Yeah. They would have had to leave somewhere else to live. So he's like making trips back there. To me, I'm like, and again, it's like, no one has anything bad to say about that guy.
Nope.
But it just goes for me. I'm like, and I get it. You do weird things when you're grieving and everyone grieves differently.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But I'm like, it's so hard for me because I look at that and I go like, why? Like they weren't done. They told you they weren't done. They told you they were going to do a more thorough search. Were you worried about them finding something? Right? Were you worried about the repercussions of what, like if they did a more thorough search, what would come up? Right? And I'm like, I don't know. Part of me even has wondered, like, I'm like, maybe he did find the bones. Maybe he did find the bones. And just in his shock, he's just like, I can never let them die. And I can never let my wife know that they're like, that was part of the like grief for him and the shock. It's just like, he hid that fact that he knew they were dead. And then he just like continued to like, kind of maybe, I'm not saying they're delusional. This case is so fucking weird. I have no idea what happened to their kids. But what I'm saying is maybe there's a fact that like, you know, maybe he fueled a delusion if that was the case. You know what I mean? It's so hard. There's so many fucking weird discrepancies in this.
Yeah. And like
the fact that no bodies, man, fucking no bones.
Yeah.
Ever.
So as we've been going here, I've been kind of looking up because I wanted to get that straight about between the guy who cut the phone line and the salesman. So what it was, I guess his name was Lonnie Johnson, had been at the house that night and he was seen stealing a block and tackle.
Oh yeah. Yes.
What's a block and tackle?
I don't know what a block. I think tackle is that there's a tackle box like for fishing.
Well, I mean, tackle, I would imagine it's for fishing, but he claims that he was seen stealing a block and tackle. Block and tackle is a tackle system of two or more pulleys. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So that would be something like, you know, you're, when you come like a come along winch, when you like need to, yeah, like, we use those for lifting stairs and stuff. Like you hook a couple pulleys, you grab to the stairs, you pull it up. So I guess he's stealing one. And then he claims that, well, then he was tried with cutting the phone line, but he was only given
a fine or something.
Yeah. He's only given a fine, it looks like. So yeah, the mysterious details, Lonnie Johnson claimed that he meant to cut the power line, but accidentally cut the phone line. That's right. So Lonnie Johnson did that. But before is CJ Janutulo. That's not his name. Fiorenzo Janutulo, who was a former employee of George.
Now selling life insurance.
Selling life insurance. And he was actually there that night too. And he became angry because he wouldn't buy life insurance on fucking Christmas Eve. Get out of town. What are you doing?
Hey, I just spent my money on all these gifts.
No one wants to buy life insurance on Christmas Eve. Come back in fucking April. Like, come on, man.
Yeah. So you have two people.
You have multiple characters.
There.
Yeah.
Both characters apparently upset with his views on Mussolini. It's interesting, dude.
Well,
interesting.
Definitely what it says here is definitely Giannattullo, who had opposite views on Mussolini, claiming that Mussolini was a great and powerful leader and everyone should love him if you're from Italy. And this guy was like, I think he might be a scumbag dictator and I think it's bad for Italy. And they're like, no.
Yeah.
Don't like that.
Well, he was already dead too. So you're like,
yeah, that's what I mean. Like, yeah. So it's, unfortunately, because when cases are so old, the internet discrepancies.
Oh, dude,
they start to filter out quite a bit.
There is threads, like wild threads, for that one, of like what actually transpired. So it's quite interesting to like go down them because there is wild theories left and right, just unbelievable. So it's, you know, if you're interested in that kind of stuff or you're, this is kind of being, you know, piquing your interest, head to those, those internet sleuth boards, because they're on there. People are having active discussions to this day about this case, trying to figure out if they're alive and if those remaining five kids are somewhere in the U.S. alive and well. But you think like at this point, with now fame and fortune, like someone would be like, I'm one of the solder kids. You know what I mean? Like, here's my tell-all.
Well, if you're 14 at the time, I mean, you remember. If you were 4 or 6, you might not, right? You might not remember. But if you're 14,
well, especially if you're being told, like, "Hey, mom, your family died in a fire."
Well, then they would have to like drug you on the way out, and like we rescued you from the fire. I mean,
buddy, have you ever picked up like a fucking toddler that's sleeping? They are drugged
every day. Every single day of my life.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like they have no idea what's going on.
Yeah. I mean, if they're young, it makes sense. Like they wouldn't know what happened. But if you're 14 or 10, there's like a 14, a 10, an 8, a 6. Like they were spaced out.
Yeah.
But yeah, so no one ever came forward. A lot of the theories never been proven. There's a reason this case has lingered. almost for 90 years.
Let us know your thoughts. Let us know if you've gone down a particular thread or something and you think you know what it is, fucking shoot us a message. AlienTheorist.com, hit us up on socials. Let us know your thoughts.
If there's another true crime case like this that maybe is not well known that you think we should do, let us know.
Yeah, hit us up.
When Dan's not here, we do them.
Yeah, we hit him up. No problem. We did Theorites of the Week at the beginning of the show. We gave them to Lizard Caveman, third place, and The Slain King. Second place, you guys are Theorites of the Week. This week, though.
Listen. Sometimes.
We've been far too nice for far too long.
I had enough. It's fucking people. Yeah,
we've had enough. We're bringing out some duds of the week.
Duds of the week.
Duds. First dud.
Let's give a little context of what dud of the week is going to be, because this might be something we start doing, unless it becomes there's too many duds of the week and we have to cut it out again.
Yeah.
But if you listen to an episode for 4 seconds and you didn't like what you heard and you went out of your way to write a bad review, which is actually not representative of the episode at all, you're a fucking dud.
And some huge fucking dud.
And sometimes we see the same name pop up a few times, and then you really become the fucking dud of the week.
Now, for some context on the fucking last ATT Live, we had Byron on.
Yep.
And in Canada, one of the fucking huge things going on right now is anti-trans protests around schools and school boards.
Let's be more clear. Not anti-trans. Some parents are concerned of what's being taught in school is promoting an ideology that they maybe do not agree with. Let's say teaching gender and gender identity too early in school, like before kids are in puberty lots of different reasons.
We never said we fucking could. We were bringing up the issue.
You're just bringing up the issue.
We had a teacher
Byron
that we know that's a friend of ours.
that's in school. So to get to the fucking bottom of it, we asked if that's true. If is there truth to these people's concern that are picketing and fucking, you know, that are being labeled as hateful picketing school boards and causing issues? Are they misinformed? And Byron informed us they are in fact misinformed, and it's getting blown out of proportion, and it's not what it seems. And I thought his answers,
pretty good answers
of what they were teaching, is were good answers. You know, the Columbia partner being respectful of everyone. So fuck you, tattooed lizard, for writing us one star review saying that we're transphobic and we talk badly about homosexuals and trans people. We didn't. If anything, we fact check an issue going on, especially in Canada right now. We fact checked it, and it was actually in favor of those communities.
I actually went back and listened. So I was like, did I smoke too much weed and did I say something stupid? So I went back and listened to that section of the episode, and I thought it was like, pretty much the premise was, listen, this doesn't bother us, not one bit. We just asked Byron, who's a teacher in the school system, what was actually happening. He told us, we made some jokes. Jokes are jokes. I'm not making fun of anyone. Yeah. Jokes, if you can't make fun of the joke around about any group of people, that's just dumb. Like we're not like making fun of people. We made some jokes. We talked about a ridiculous shop teacher in Ontario.
Yeah, it's hilarious. It's funny.
And it turns out he actually might be just taking the piss out of the community, because like, this is so ridiculous. I'm going to do this.
Yep.
So anyways, dud of the week. Why?
Tattooed lizard.
And you know what?
Suck it.
If you hear this, if you're still listening to the show, because you're like, I'm never listening to these fucking guys again. But if you're listening right now,
I hope you write another fucking review, motherfucker.
I actually would like to personally talk to you. Because
come on the show.
Because people always leave these anonymous one star terrible reviews. I dare you, if you're listening, man up or woman up.
Come on the show.
Or whoever up. Come on the show, and then you can give your other side of the story, which why you think we're such terrible people, the worst human beings in the world, and we deserve a one star, blah, blah. I dare you. Yeah. We reach out, we'll have a nice conversation, and you can give your side of the story.
Hate-fueled conversation.
So much hate.
To you.
So much hate will be there. One more. Let's give one more dud of the week, though, because this is fucking ridiculous.
I'm just going to say, whatever you are, I hate. That's the...
There you go.
The other one, I'm not going to say his full name, because I'm not going to stoop to his level. But fuck you, Chad.
Yeah, he's a Chad.
God damn it. Chad, anytime any kind of politics gets brought up, this guy fucking writes in about stay in your lane and all this bullshit about American politics. And then we were talking about Canadian politics. We were making jokes because Parliament fucking applauded a Nazi. That happened in Canada. And
he was he was a Ukrainian soldier. But he was fighting for Germany against Russia, so technically he's Nazi.
But it's a pretty well known now. He goes, the Nazi did not just get found in a bar. What a joke. Learn some freaking history, for God's sake. I made a fucking joke, Chad.
Joke. And the joke was because they didn't do any fact checking on this 97-year-old World War II soldier. Braden just said,
they probably found him at the Legion.
They probably found him at the, exactly. So fucking dumb.
You fucking idiot.
You fucking moron.
Chad. And then Chad goes on to say that, like, they're all Nazis. You haven't figured it out. Every time you guys attempt to talk politics, you're way out of base. You don't fucking know anything, Chad, about Canadian politics, you moron. So why don't you stay in your own lane of fucking being a loser?
Hey, if you want to say, if we talk shit about, you know, Canadian or American politician, and you want to say you're out of your lane, that's fine. Because, we're from Canada. Sure. We're not American. It's funny for us. But we have our own issues here. And if we want to talk shit about Trudeau and you say, we're out of lane, we're out of it. Fuck.
Yeah.
You suck. You just fucking suck, dude.
We got two words for you. Suck.
You come on the show too. Chad. I dare you. You're up. Yeah. You're up next.
No, I'm not giving Chad any time. Chad seems like the guy, time the guy that would come on and fucking.
We'll just make fun of him and then he'll probably probably burn our house down after.
Yeah, fucking throw some fireballs and send us pictures of our kids. Anyways, 30 years later.
That's not something I want to do every week, but sometimes there's just a couple people you're like, you're the problem. You're the problem. Yeah. What's going on? You're the fucking problem.
Not everyone's fucking hateful to take a, you know, to take a snippet of a podcast and be like, you guys talk bad. And we're like, no, we don't. Fuck you.
Have some
you
fun.
Talk bad about you, tattooed lizard, you fucking snake.
Honestly, we're all very liberal guys, meaning we all believe in equal and fair opportunity for everyone. It doesn't matter who.
I'm not even going to defend myself. That's just, I know who I am. Yeah,
exactly.
Go fuck yourself. Fuck what
you.
Do you do?
Fuck you.
What do you do, tattoo lizard? Fucking nothing.
Probably searches the internet to write bad reviews. Yeah. That's their only existence.
Yeah. We got a huge supporter of the trans community right now in Thailand.
We do. He's pulling his own Meissner right now. He's having a good time by with it.
New one-star review.
There's
for that
another
joke.
One. There's it's another joke, yeah, and we're screwed again.
Yeah, suck it.
Anyways, on the complete opposite spectrum, if you're not supporting the show already and you want early access to the case files where we make fun of everyone, I guess, be terrible human beings, you got to go to patreon.com, hit the support tab, support your boys, support your favorite podcast.
Yeah, support us against this fucking cancel culture.
Come on, dude.
This bullshit.
Fuck you. All right, this week's newest supporters, we got Bradley Russell, Roddy Warren, Braden Cantrid, Jacob Akey, and Karu B. Thank you very much for supporting the show.
And as we always say at the end of these things, keep those eyes on the skies. Go buy some new merch.
In the afternoons.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.